Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the second Money in Markets of 2022. This is working up to be quite a year, John.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. But yeah, good. You know, why don't you talk about the theme?
The theme is intent, murder versus, mistake. And yeah. We see sort of two camps emerging in the science and medical groups that have opposed COVID-19 and what's been going on. And one is basically saying this is genocide, and the other is saying, oh, it's a giant mistake. And you're literally seeing one group saying this is a financial coup d'etat, we have to stop the mandates and the passports. And the other is saying, this is a giant mistake, and it's a problem with pharmaceutical corruption and regulatory capture, and we need to stop the mandates and really reform the system so the vaccine industry can proceed with integrity. And
right.
The other thing is the second group has captured this, has grabbed onto this theory that we've had a mass psychosis, and that's what caused it. Has nothing to do with the going direct reset. It's just we went mad together, but it's okay. It's comforting because we can fix it.
Yeah, so one side is the system's been captured by criminals and we need to get rid of the criminals. Then the second side is we need to negotiate. We need to play footsie with the criminals.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So one is deal fundamentally with the failure of the governance system, and the other is kill the puppets. Right.
Right.
The not even ways, kill the puppets, gonna... fire them. Fire the puppets.
Right. The vote your way out of criminal control.
Right.
Which is never going to happen.
And it's kind of interesting because I had several confrontations yesterday because I had to point out to people that in most legal systems, the statutory accountability for murder and genocide is not you lose your job. It's something a little more serious.
Right. You're incarcerated for the rest of your life, assuming you live.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So
there's a sub theme. There's a sub theme I'd like to identify that I didn't notice yesterday when we went through the stories, but the sub theme I want to touch on, we'll see it a couple times, is because experts, and I'd leave it at that for now. Because experts.
Right.
We're going to see that a few times.
Right.
No.
Experts for rent. Here we go.
Yeah, boy.
Okay, Farmageddon, okay. Let's go.
Farmageddon, let's get into it. The first website really is called How Bad Is My Batch? And I want to scroll down real quick at the bottom and see if I can zoom in here to this funny name. Craig Pardecooper, who is a British epidemiologist, and he has put together this site, How Bad Is My Batch? You can see I've clicked on the Moderna batch, and you literally go to the site. It's bare-boned. You click on Moderna batch codes or whatever, and then it has, you could just search your number if you know the number of the batch, and then it has adverse reaction, deaths, disabilities, life-threatening illnesses, and they're just laid all out as pretty as can be. Like I say, it's bare bones, but it's all there. And you can see, Pardecooper, the reason I mentioned him, if you go to this website and you copy and paste his name and you drop it into BitChute, you'll find a video he did on how the distribution of adverse reaction and deaths among batches of the COVID-19 vaccines are nowhere near being evenly distributed. They're very, very heavily skewed. And you see this right here. This very first batch in Moderna, you see 90 deaths, okay? That is way above anything you see below it. Then you have 39, 36, 45, 62, so on. And then that skew continues throughout this data. And you could take this data and you could copy and paste it into Excel. But this is a very practical site.
Right.
That you could check your batch if you had the misfortune of getting vaccinated.
2 weeks ago, I watched a presentation by a colleague of Mike Yaden, who's been talking about the bad batches. and who's been working with Craig. And it's a phenomenal job a group of volunteers are doing. And it's absolutely clear, and we've discussed this before, this cannot be an accident. This is not a mistake.
Right.
Whatever.
Let's.
Whatever is happening, you have all the manufacturers producing bad batches that are producing a much higher kill rate. And I should point out these numbers are for VAERS, and the from the Skidmore survey and all the other things we're seeing, the deaths are dramatically underreported in these numbers.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, you see anywhere from 1% to 10% are right. reported. You mentioned Mike Yaden. I want to cut real quick to, there's a video he did with Reiner Fulmich, who you can see there in the upper right, along with Robin Minotti, where they talk about some of the issues you're talking about. But there, if you look at the show notes for this Money and Markets, you'll see a link to the Odyssey, the Corona Investigative Committee with Mike Session. I think it's episode 86 or some such thing, but it's there. You can check this video.
Right.
It's a long video, so we didn't really... weren't able to get a usable, a digestible excerpt.
Dr. Yaden is one of the people who's so clear about what the framework is. He's basically saying this is genocide. You have got to not comply with the passports and with the mandates. And he is really sounding the alarm about the intentionality behind this.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And so that's a good point. It's like, well, this touches on, is it murder? You know, murder is intent.
Right.
And it's impossible to believe that these manufacturing processes, which are so tightly controlled in the clinical setting, are just randomly, you know, spitting out the numbers they're spitting out and right. causing the number of deaths they've caused because they're not stopping. If right. it had been an accident, people say, whoa, you know, we killed all these people. Let's cut this thing off now.
Right. So that. when the deaths on VAERS went higher than all the vaccines since VAERS been started, you know, there have been many different moments when they could stop and say, wait, there's a problem. And each time they haven't stopped, they've continued to expand the mandates to younger and younger ages, where there's absolutely no scientific logical reason to give anybody anything. And there never was. I mean,
right.
You know, these are emergency use authorization. We have effective therapies. There's no basis for an emergency use authorization. And if you look at the devastation of adverse events and deaths, there's no reason to keep going. The vaccine is clearly far more dangerous than whatever the phenomena of COVID-19 is. So.
Yeah. Another way I kind of come out on the, is it intent or is it some mass, you know, hypnosis event is, well, who is suppressing opinion? Who is censoring opinion? Who is right. concealing information?
Right.
Because if it's truly accidental, you wouldn't see the kind of systematic concealment and the systematic persecution of people who even raise questions
right.
about the prevailing narrative. You see exactly that.
Right.
It's totally intentional.
Right. But the other thing is it's a very significant operation. You know, it's an operation with surveillance. It's an operation with implementation of financial and legal and health penalties. You know, there is a very significant covert social credit system. There is a lot of nuts and bolts going behind the scene to engineer and push pressure. This is not a mass psychosis.
Right.
You know, this is a trench warfare. Right.
The massive coordination you're talking about.
Right.
Speaks to centralized command and control. I mean, get real.
Right. And if you look at the nuts and bolts of the control system, we've been talking about it and documenting it for years on the Solari Report. They've spent decades building this up. One of the great things about Kennedy's book, The Real Anthony Fauci, is it shows you and it describes, you know, the building of this control machinery over many, many years. And you see it. You can feel it.
Yeah. Right. It's not like that machinery is suddenly going to cut off.
Right.
it's just going to increase.
Right.
Anyway, the next story really isn't a story. It's another kind of practical website. This is about travel, passport, visa, and health. And it's one of these, you can see this, it's a series of drop-down menus. So what you do is you let me zoom in a little bit, maybe see it a little bit better. Yeah. So you can drop in, you know, where you're going. Let's say you're going to Cameroon. You're traveling from, you know, the U.S. I tried to do this earlier, Catherine, and let me just try another one. Anyway, you could just, it's a series of drop-down menus, and supposedly they'll tell you what restrictions. Let's see, arrival date, depart. Maybe that's why I got it wrong. It'll tell you the restrictions.
Right, and I would always go and check with the local websites for the countries you're going to. But I find this website very useful because if you're planning international trips and crossing borders, it's very hard to find the information. And so if you do your first cut with this website, you can really, you know, you can map out an itinerary, then you can always confirm with the local authorities. But for me, it's very useful for international travel.
Yeah, you actually travel internationally. I do not. So my motivation to sort of stick with it and get through that website wasn't as high as it could have been, and I never got through it.
Well, but remember, I've got, my borders here are tiny. So,
yeah,
in my, you know, an hour drive and I cross a border. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. My playpen is a bit bigger in the U.S., especially, you know, in the Midwest. Anyway, next story. This is from Dutch News. This is an interesting story because it underscores the kind of sloppy journalism you see. So 1 in 4 funerals delayed as coronavirus death surge. Let me just zoom in here and just read a couple sentences and highlight the problem. Funeral directors are struggling to keep up with the high number of deaths in December, caused partly by the surge in coronavirus infections during the autumn. And it's like, well, so what's going on? Is it a high number of deaths that's causing this? You know, causing the people to struggle with these funerals? Or is it complications with this stuff? The country's largest undertaker, Dila, said around one in four funerals could not be arranged within the legal limit of 6 days because of coronavirus-related issues. In addition to the high demand on crematoria and chapels, funerals are being delayed because family members are in quarantine or unable to travel home from abroad at this time. So you see the problem there.
Story makes absolutely no sense, but the reason I wanted it in is we saw November, you know, which very recently announced in November. We talked about it last week, I think. November 2021, I'm trying to remember if it was a state in Germany or all Germany, but the all-cause mortality skyrocketed relative to the five-year average. When Bakhti published in December the results from the German pathologist of the vaccine injury deaths, so the vaccine injury deaths are clearly significantly above what's being reported in things like FAIR, or Vigi Access, and the question we're all asking is, well, how do we understand what the real death rates are? Then we talked last week about the Indiana Insurance Company that said the deaths were up 40%, or death claims were up 40% from last year. So there have been these little indications that the death rate of all-cause mortality is going up tremendously. Now, Dennis Rancor just finished doing a study showing that the all-cause death mortality in 2020 was not above average. In other words, there was no pandemic. It's up on his website. It's really remarkable. You know, but that's not the case in 2021. After the vaccine started, all-cause mortality, we're getting all these different signals that it's rising. So what I'm looking is signals and statistics that will tell me, okay, what's happening with all-cause mortality in 2021? And you look at the reports from funeral directors, and I'm getting reports. I sent you one from a Salir Report subscriber. I keep getting these reports from funeral directors that the death rate is significantly up. So what I would tell everybody is if you see any what you consider to be reliable anecdotal information about what's happening in funeral homes in your area, please post or send it in.
Yeah. Notice too what that Dutch story does not do. It doesn't try to blame the entire problem on COVID, right? It's saying, well, it's partly higher infections in December, but it's partly COVID restrictions because people are quarantining and there's infections and they can't. So they're blurring the causation.
Right.
Right. They're not, they know they can't get away with this COVID story. It's all COVID anymore.
Right.
You know, but we'll see a bit more of that as we go on. In fact, in the next story, that's sort of the first, everybody's assuming it's because COVID, and that's not skating as much as it once did. But let's cut to the next story. This is from the Defender, Children of Health Defense News and Views. This is about the Supreme Court case. Supreme Court judges spar over vaccine mandates. Twitter erupts over false claims. And I just want to highlight a few parts of this. The two mandates in question include one. So there's the Supreme Court heard two cases. They cover two different, let's just call it jurisdictions. One imposed on private businesses with 100 or more employees. That's the widespread mandate. And the other one for healthcare facilities participating in Medicare or Medicaid programs. And if you go down, this is where we'll get into sort of the misinformation coming from, let's just call it the left side of this issue, even though I don't really think it is conservative and liberal, but it just shakes out that way in this case. The liberal justices said vaccine mandates were a needed response to the public health crisis, which Justice Stephen Breyer said caused 750 million new COVID cases yesterday in the U.S., more than double the U.S. population. So obviously that's a massive piece of information right out of the gate. And then Justice Kagan says, we know the best way to prevent spread is for people to get vaccinated. We know that. And it's like, well, that seems to me to be very much disputed. And I'll get to, so the blue highlighting is people who are in favor of the mandates, and the green highlighting I've got basically on people who are opposing it. Chief Justice Roberts and Gorsuch said the states and Congress, rather than the federal agencies, were better equipped to address the pandemic in the nation's workplace. Then, so that's two who are against. Then you have Amy Coney Barrett said the OSHA regulation appeared to reach too broadly,
John,
and covering all. I want to take a second to explain sort of why you're seeing misinformation from the side that's supporting vaccines. And the reason you're seeing that is that in a typical court case, including this one, all of the information that's being debated and all of the issues that are being debated, we have an adversarial system. So you have two sets of briefs, one arguing one way and one arguing the other way. Okay? And that's really all you're supposed to be relying on. You're only supposed to rely on, as a judge, as a justice, the record that's presented in front of you. Okay? And if it's not in the record, you can't really rely on it. There's a major exception, however, and that exception is called judicial notice. You don't need somebody to brief the fact that 1 + 1 = 2, that north is up and south is down, you know, that 100 pounds weighs more than 1 ounce. You know, those things, the justices can take notice of that. What's going on here with the people supporting Pfizer and supporting the vaccines is they are taking judicial notice or purporting to take judicial notice of things that are very hotly debated. And that's really how they're trying to backdoor in this vaccine mandate and rule in favor of Pfizer and Moderna and the mRNA injections, is they're taking judicial notice of things left, right, and center. And as people are pointing out, including the Defender here, they're getting it wrong. There are 750,000 people, 750 million people infected. It's just a ludicrous assertion to make. And I can guarantee you that's nowhere in the record because it's just not factual.
So, I remember once having a conversation with a colleague in Philadelphia many years ago, and the Philadelphia Magazine had just had an article about judges throwing cases and explained that they were being paid $300 a case. And my friend was very depressed, and I said, why are you so depressed? And he said, you know, I just hate it. And he said, in New York, I'm sure they'd charge $10,000 or $20,000. He said, that's the problem with Philadelphia, the throw case for $300.
Wow.
when you know, I listened to a couple of the excerpts or talked to people who were reading the transcripts and didn't read the original transcripts myself. But what you saw, you know, I kept thinking, and I told you this, of the of the movie Idiocracy.
Right.
Because it was so humiliating to believe that several of the justices were either this corrupt or this uninformed or this stupid or this sleazy in terms of inserting these kinds of things into the record. And
Yeah.
you just felt like, if you want to try and destroy the government by killing the brand, this is doing a pretty good job. And I told you I listened to that one excerpt of the Solicitor General, and she was just boldly stating things that are just factually not correct.
That doesn't bother me that much, Catherine. That's an adversarial system. We have adversaries, and it's designed for people to call out lies like that. What bothers me, I want to cut to the sort of the next story. It's the same Supreme Court case from Zero Hedge, and just an example of what you're talking about. But this is coming from a justice, not from an advocate, but from a justice.
Right.
Look at this one. This is from Sotomayor. The worst offender in terms of the stunning lack of knowledge is Justice Sotomayor, who not only claimed that there are 100,000 children in serious condition, with many on ventilators, but that Omicron is as deadly as Delta. I mean, and again, she's trying to say that, she trade judicial notice of it, because that's not going to appear anywhere in the papers.
Right, and it's clearly something that any doctor is going to know is not true. In other words, there are millions of people or hundreds of thousands of people in America, who are going to look at that and realize, that's just not true. So this is serious debasement of the brand. And you don't feel, I was brought up to believe that an advocate was not free to just be factually wrong in a significant way. In other words, advocacy didn't mean that you could just create, commit felonies.
It doesn't mean you're free to lie. You're an officer of the court. You have certain
Right.
duties.
Right.
But yet the system is set up so that advocates check one. It's like cross-examination. Yeah, the guy could get up there and direct exam and tell lies, but he's just going to get eviscerated on
But
cross-examination
not in
by a
this one
competent
because
examiner.
the people on the other side weren't holding them accountable for misinformation. It's my
Well, and
understanding.
because it's coming from the justices themselves in these cases. The
Right.
justices have become advocates via judicial notice. And I want to point out in another part of the Zero Hedge story on the Supreme Court cases about why this is so bad. This is from Gorsuch. He said health regulations normally fall to the states. He says if there's an ambiguity, meaning if there's an argument one way and the other, why isn't this a major question that therefore belongs to the people's representatives in the states and in the halls of Congress? And that's the sum total of the issue. That
Absolutely.
they're trying to short circuit this and say, no,
Right.
no, we can take judicial notice of it and we can just cut Congress and we can cut the people out of it because experts.
Right. Well, it's just like, FASB 56. We can adopt an administrative rule that cancels out the Constitution and all the laws and all the regulations.
Because experts, they
Right.
signed off on this accounting regulation. We go
We're
with the
an
experts. They know
accounting
Betty.
board and we're experts in accounting, and this is very convenient. Right.
All right. Next story to get off of the Supreme Court and move on. This probably should be in pushback, but anyway, Belgium reverses COVID cultural rules. The show must go on. Belgium reversed some of its COVID-19 restrictions Wednesday, allowing for the reopening of cinemas, theaters, and concert halls. The government had come under increasing pressure to undo last week's decision on closures, which again comes from experts, which weren't even backed by scientific experts. It highlighted, so it's just politicians willy-nilly imposing restrictions. It highlighted the widening fault line between authorities trying to keep the pandemic at bay with on-the-spot decisions and a public increasingly frustrated by the limits on their personal freedoms. You know? Good for the
So
Belgians.
I'm talking to people all over Europe. Europeans are furious. They are absolutely furious, and particularly the small business owners. The small business owners have figured out this is completely a ruse, and they are furious. So
I'm starting to get that, even that vibe and that flavor, even from people in New York,
right?
Which is, to me, astonishing. I mean, I talked to someone who bought into this whole narrative hook, line, and sinker, and she's like, wait a minute, I've gotten jabbed 3 times and I'm still getting COVID. You know, when are you going to sell me the Brooklyn Bridge? She's not
happy.
Well,
if you look at the passport apps, it envisions eight or more. You know, and I think they're planning on doing every regular sequence, whether it's every 6 months or every 3 months or every month.
Oh yeah, they're now longer. They're even changing the language on that and saying really the operative term is you're not up to date on your vaccines.
Right. Well, here's the thing. If you look at the compounding adverse events and deaths, there's no way that stays secret. And there's no way that the small business is going under or the income's being lost stays secret. This is real harsh reality for millions and millions of families. And there's no way they can be tricked by just spin on this.
Yeah, right. Like Shakespeare had it. The truth will out.
Right, right.
Yeah, you can get away with this for so long. And it appears from anecdotally at least, it sounds like people are like, wait a minute, you know, enough is enough.
Well, that's why I'm so concerned about this effort to push the idea that it's a mistake instead of murder. Because if you push the idea that it's a mistake and maybe you get the childhood mandates, but you get the vaccine passports and the CBDCs, then they've got total totalitarian control and everything's going to come back with a vengeance.
Well, hopefully people are getting moving off of that square and there's a sea change underway. I really think there is. People are just tired of it and they're ready to move on with their lives.
Right.
And this story just has lost traction.
Right.
Anyway. Anyway, more and more information keeps coming out. I want to go to the next story. This is from two doctors we've talked about before. Michael Palmer, Dr. Michael Palmer and Super.
This
Bhakti.
Is fabulous. This is fabulous. Yeah. This blows the lid on the whole lie.
Yeah. This is a good one. And it's an article by Doctors for COVID Ethics called Elementary, My Dear Watson. Why mRNA vaccines are a very bad idea. Not just mRNA COVID, all of them are bad.
Right.
And they walk through this explanation. I want you to just kind of just look at this. I won't go through the article in detail, but there's basically 5 sections to it. There's an intro, how mRNA COVID vaccines work. They kind of walk through that, not very long. How the immune system deals with natural viruses, how the immune system reacts to mRNA vaccines. Why the first injection of mRNA is more harmful than that of conventional live virus vaccine, and then a conclusion, and that's it. You know, it's straightforward article,
right,
about how
and it's
mRNA
important
vaccines
because
are bad.
If you look at the vaccine industry, there, and first of all, I don't think this is the COVID-19 injection is a vaccine, but they're planning a huge and wildly profitable pipeline on using mRNA technology to address all the adverse events created by COVID-19 injections. So COVID-19 suppresses your immune system. That causes all sorts of things to blossom, from shingles to herpes to fast-acting cancer. And sure enough, the next round of mRNA technology and vaccinations is meant to deal with all of those impacts.
Yeah.
And so it's a spiral down. You get poisoned, that makes you sick, and then they give you a new poison to address your symptoms from your last poisoning.
Right.
Right.
You're just you're literally a cash cow for them.
Right.
Just a pincushion cash cow. It's crazy.
Right, and that's why we don't need a reform that saves the vaccine industry.
No, right. Reform, and again, playing footsie with these criminals is not your way out of this problem.
Right.
You have to acknowledge this problem for what it is.
Right.
For us to move on.
Right.
Dancing around it, it's not going to work.
Right.
Anyway, the last story in Farmageddon is actually a video where enough people, like remember last week we had the yearbook, the pink yearbook of all the athletes dying. Evidently, this has gotten on to the radar of the powers that be, who are now trying to put, they're now putting out propaganda in an effort to sort of explain away the collapsing athlete phenomenon. So I want you to watch this video and talk about it once I play it here. Is that not astonishing?
That, you know, I sent that to you. When I found it, I said, I have never, that gets the Hubris of the Century Award.
It also gets the slick propaganda, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the solution to us poisoning your athletes is for you to give us more money so that we can come up with a very expensive biotech solution to heal their poisoning.
But also, I mean, notice how they work in the notion the collapsing athletes has been going on forever.
Right.
They're collapsing all the time. If it's dunk, they fall over. And the way they do that is say, you know what? The more money you give us, we can just keep solving problems like that one.
Right.
It's like, what do you mean? This is brand new.
Right.
3-year-olds having grippers on the soccer field is a new phenomenon caused by these vaccines. Right. And you know it. Don't pretend it's been going on for decades. Right. It's ridiculous.
Right, but anyway. If you look at the hubris it takes to do something like that, I think the promoter was the British Heart Association.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was.
If you look at the hubris it takes to do that, it's pretty. I mean, you're talking about a viciousness which is extraordinary. And it tells you how, you know, this really is a war and they are playing to win and there are no limits to what they will do or say.
Right. There's no limits.
Right.
Right.
So when lose
5-year-olds, Right. This, and with they're playing for keeps.
Right.
Literally.
This is a genocide and this is the advertising for the genocide.
Right. That's an advertising campaign to cover up a genocide and explain it away and to perpetuate it by recycling more money into the killer's hands.
Right.
Like, are you
kidding
me?
And this is why the Doctors for COVID Ethics article about the mRNA technology is so important, because the shot they're working on in that heart association is going to turn out to be an mRNA technology.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, enough of Farmageddon. I'm thoroughly depressed. Let's move on to a Fed watch and see what's going on here. First article from Wall Street on Parade, and this gets back to the repo crisis in September of 2019. Wall Street banks have an alibi for their $11.23 trillion emergency repo loans from the Fed, and it's a doozy. And so they start off with the Martin safe. You know, basically for the 9 months between September and July of September 2019 and July of 2020, if you added up all the money the Fed shoveled out in the repo crisis, it was $11 trillion. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Which comes out to about $6 billion per business day, which to me that's a lot of money.
Right.
Right. $6 billion a day. That's a material event on anybody's balance sheet. I don't care how big you are. $6 billion is a lot of scratch. So I know what the Martins are trying to do. They're trying to sort of maximize the impact of it. But anyway, let's get back into it and look at the story. So the Martins, they said, we decided to ask for the banks to own the New York Fed, meaning the commercial banks in the region, if they reported this emergency borrowing binge from the Fed on their SEC filings. They pretty much got ignored, the Martin did. But the Citigroup's response was very enlightening. It went like this. Quote, I am going to decline to comment on this open market operations data. And the Martins then say, this strongly suggests that one or more banks are going to claim that they're not required to disclose the tens of billions of dollars in emergency loans from the Fed for a financial crisis that is yet to be explained, because they were not really taking emergency loans at all, but were simply being white knights helping the poor beleaguered Fed with its open market operations. Wow. That's really astonishing.
Can I argue on behalf of Citibank here?
Sure.
If Citibank had signed up to help the Fed take down the economy, and this was part of it, they were simply acting as an agent, not as a principal. It wasn't really a loan. It was just a piece of the financial bazooka that they were using to shoot the economy with, right?
Yeah, but we still don't know, as the Martins point out, what was going on in September. What precipitated this entire thing?
Right, but they could have been acting as an agent instead of a principal, using that money.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And the Fed does that routinely. It uses the commercial banks as agents to get things done in the retail economy.
Right.
I mean, that's really the history of the 2020 pandemic response by the Fed expanding its balance sheet and causing the twin expansion of the retail money supply. That's exactly what it does. It uses the commercial banks to do its as their handmaiden. So this, you're right. It's not a terrible defense. The implications are horrifying, but it's not a bad defense.
The implications are horrifying, but the implications are simply match with what we already know. If you read your annual, if you read your write up of the Going Direct reset, you know, of course, they're working together to take down the economy.
Okay. Continuing on in Fed Watch, this is one that's going to hit near and dear for a lot of people. I know it does me going to the grocery store. Federal Reserve puts wheels in motion for balance sheet reductions. So the FOMC had a meeting, and here's what went on. The Federal Reserve at its December meeting began plans to start cutting the amount of bonds it is holding, with members saying that a reduction in the balance sheet likely will start sometime after the central bank begins raising rates, according to minutes released Wednesday. Market expectations currently are for the Fed to start raising its benchmark interest rate in March, which would mean balance sheet reduction could start before summer. Okay. Let me say a word about that. The way the balance sheet would get reduced is one surefire way for the Fed to reduce the balance sheet would be to sell off assets. Okay. Right. Sell treasuries, sell mortgage-backed securities. It's not going to do that. The way the Fed typically reduced balance sheet, got rid of assets from 2018 into 2019 was it lets those things roll off, that those bonds get paid off, mortgage-backed securities gets paid off, and the Fed simply doesn't replace them. And you see the balance sheet tick down like that.
Right.
But that's a long way off. The other element of this is the interest rate. There's, oh, we're going to raise interest rates. But the theory of interest rates is you raise interest rates, you make loans less attractive, and the money supply doesn't expand as much. Do you really see that happening?
No.
Raising interest rates?
No, I don't.
I don't really either.
I don't see them raising. I mean, interest rates are going to fluctuate, you know, maybe within 100 basis point range, but they're not going to let a significant rise in interest rates happen, because at this point you've got, well, with one exception, you've got the whole sovereign infrastructure. You've levered up the governments. You brought interest rates down so you can lever them even more. And you're not going to play with that until you're ready to bring down the whole structure.
Right. Right. Exactly. Not to mention the fact that raising it.
The only way they can pay those interest rates is to borrow more money in the treasury market, which you're going to have to monetize with your balance sheet. Right.
Right. Because nobody's buying treasuries except for you.
And the pension funds.
And our retirement savings. You also owe interest on the debt as it is now by raising interest rates, which the interest component is already about $300 billion. You raise interest rates, it's, you know, come on.
Right.
You want to pay $1 trillion a year in interest? Really?
Really.
I just don't see that as realistic. The Wall Street Journal also has a story on this. Same thing, a bit different spin. So we take a quick look at this. Fed minutes point to possible rate increase in March. So back to the rate increase. Officials are also considering an earlier timetable for shrinking their $8.76 trillion bond portfolio. Officials at their meeting last month eyed a faster timetable for raising interest rates this year, potentially as soon as in March, amid greater discomfort with higher inflation. So there we have the inflation bugaboo introduced. Most central bank officials, in projections released after last month's meeting, penciled in at least 0.75 percentage point rate increases this year. In September, around half of the group thought rate increases could wait until 2023. For months, Fed leaders stuck to a view that higher price pressures in 2021 were caused primarily by supply chain bottlenecks and would ease on their own.
Jesus Christ.
But Fed Chair Powell had before the meeting signaled much less conviction about that forecast, and other officials last month broadly shared his views. Participants generally continue to anticipate that inflation would decline significantly over the course of 2022. As supply constraint eased, almost all stated they had revised up their forecasts of inflation for 2022, notably, and many did so for 2023 as well, the minute said. So they're saying, well, we're sticking with our forecasts, but yeah, the inflation might last for a couple more years.
You know, I hate to be gruesome, but if we look at the early signals of increased death rate, you know, technology is very deflationary, but so is death. So,
yeah,
if what we've seen in the last 2 months and what's shown in this Skidmore survey, continues and translates, you could see a death rate that is significantly offsetting the monetary inflation.
Well, okay, let me push back a little bit on that. And this is something you and I have mentioned before, is there's a lot of money in an older demographic,
right?
And it's just sitting there.
It's going to drop down to the next generation.
Right. If they die off, it cascades down to a spend and have fun generation.
Right.
You know, not to mention the fact that it cuts the massive Medicare and Medicaid entitlement expenses.
Right.
Right. The more people you get to die off.
So that die off is going to protect the federal budget and the corporate health care and the state health care pension. So the pension system is going to get a big relief. The money will drop down, and you're right, it's going to get greater expenditures there.
Yeah, right. But it's interesting that to me, as I read those two stories about inflation and the FOMC minutes,
right,
Powell is clearly unnerved by what he sees with inflation. And the notion that it's all supply chain, obviously, it's just totally ridiculous.
So here's the question. Why is he unnerved by it? He, if you listen to Larry Lindsey describe at the beginning of the pandemic the inflation that's baked into the cake, they knew from the beginning it was baked into the cake.
How can you just increase the retail money supply from $13 to $18 trillion? You're surprised there's inflation? And it's not going away. You can't cut
Maybe his job is to say, I'm shocked to find that there's gambling going on in this establishment. I had no idea this would cause inflation.
I think that's it.
Well, that's Powell's never been kind of a good actor, but maybe he's learned. I don't know if you saw the testimony. You know, he's going through the nomination hearing. His latest testimony, he said, CBDCs and stablecoin can coexist.
Yes.
I thought, now there's a man who wants to be renominated.
But the other thing in his testimony was in paragraph 3 of that testimony, he brings up the inflation bugaboo pretty much out of the gate.
Right.
You know, second or third paragraph, he's talking about inflation. Like, whoa.
Right.
So it's an issue that they know it's going to be a hot political issue, and they may be trying to get out in front of it.
Well, here's the thing, the senators, you know, anybody in Congress is getting real pushback from their constituents about inflation. They're mad.
Yeah, right.
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 Remember,
it's a hot potato.
If you're a small business person, your business has been shut down, but your expenses are going up.
Right.
So, right.
This next story, this really irritates me for a lot of reasons. I'm not really about the merits of the story, but the Harvard professor, this is Lieber, convicted of making false statements and tax offenses, found guilty of concealing his affiliation with the Wuhan University of Technology and his participation in China's Thousand Talents program. So why does that annoy me so? It's concealment. That's the charge here, is to conceal this stuff. I'll tell you why that bugs me in a minute. I'm going to quote the attorney general, the prosecutor. There is now no question that Charles Lieber lied to federal investigators and to Harvard in an attempt to hide his participation in the Chinese Thousand Talents Program, said acting U.S. Attorney Nathaniel Mandel. He lied to the IRS about money he was paid, and he concealed his Chinese bank account from the United States. The jury followed the evidence and the law to a just verdict, and that's that. The reason that pisses me off like nothing else is that for years and years after the financial crisis, these guys like Lanny Breuer and Eric Holder are like, well, there's no fraud, even Obama. Wall Street didn't commit fraud because there was no misrepresentations. And it's like, yes, there were. There was material concealment of information.
Right.
They were concealing the fact that they were shorting their own clients' investments in mortgage-backed securities. What do you mean there's no fraud? There's massive fraud. And suddenly, ta-da, the theory of material concealment, you know, here it shows up, and they knew about it all along.
Right. But they're trying to put Lieber under wraps because they want to keep Lieber, what he knows and what he was doing, you know, they want him silenced permanently. And that's what they've done.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I wanted this story in our mix this week is I keep trying to persuade people who are active in pushing back against COVID-19 that you want to attack where the enemy is weak. You don't want to attack on the merits. You want to attack on the thing that will kill them. And I keep saying to them, you know, they got Al Capone on the taxes. They didn't get him on the bootlegging. They didn't get him on the murder. They got him on his taxes. So, for example, one of the things I'm going to debate this week, Citibank just announced that all their employees have to be vaccinated by some date shortly.
Such and such a date, yeah.
And such a date in January, else they'll be fired, okay? And so the activists have said, well, let's boycott Citibank. I said, wait a minute. Why don't we boycott Citibank on the fact that there's $21 trillion missing out of federal accounts and they're a depository for the U.S. government? Because we've got them on that. You know, OSHA can come out with a mandate and they can say, well, the government, you know, I'm just following orders. Do you know what I mean? Let's go at them where they're really weak. You know, let's go at them on the money. And so I'm trying to get, if they can go after Lieber on taxes, let's go at these guys where they're weak and where they're breaking the law.
Yeah, right. But they never do. You know, Citigroup is one of the worst offenders. There was an email from Robert Bowen to Robert Rubin that said, hey, you know, you're selling fraudulent mortgages, and he kept selling them.
Right.
Yeah, nothing ever came of that.
Right, so I think we got to go with them where they're weak. And you know, that's what they went after Lieber because they wanted to keep the whole Wuhan story, whatever Lieber was doing in the brain-machine interface, under wraps. Anyway,
The thing that gets me about that is just the abuse of law. It's like, okay, it's a nose of wax. When it suits your purposes, there's no material concealment. When it benefits your Wall Street buddies. But then when you want to pound a guy into the sand, you want to get Lieber because you don't like him, you're familiar with the law of material concealment and fraud through and through, and he goes to jail.
You know, there was a magical moment during the litigation when I had a relative who's an attorney who decided to help at one point, and we were in a settlement discussion, and she turns to the person from the Department of Justice who's arguing that they ought to get certain money and this and that out of the pot, and they're arguing to make more money on the thing. And my relative turns to him and says, but wait a minute. You know, Hamilton Securities represented the government and they did a good job and they followed the law. You know, you're not the sheriff of Nottingham here to just exploit the situation because you have the power to shake us down. And the guy looked at her like she was the stupidest woman in America. Like, where you been, honey? That's not the game. In other words, it's a racket.
Yeah.
It's a racket.
Just shake. Yeah.
It's a shakedown. It's a racket. It's got nothing to do with the law. And that, with rare exception, and there were exceptions, but with rare exceptions, that's what I ran into when I dealt with the Department of Justice. And from everything I can see through the financial crisis, it's just gotten worse.
Yeah. But it's way out in the open now. I mean, the gloves are off.
Right.
In fact, the criminality is so rampant now, it's hard to figure out who the top dog is, but I'm going to fix that in the video. Anyway. It ain't that hard to figure out. Okay. The next story ought to be of serious interest to your subscribers, I would think. This is, again, talk about abuse of power. From the Wall Street Journal, SEC pushes for more transparency from private companies. And notice the kind of the second line here. Unicorn firms have a huge impact and absolutely no visibility. Okay, so what's the problem? You know, so what? The SEC is preparing to force more transparency from big private companies as regulators grow concerned about the lack of oversight of the private fundraising that has fueled their rise. Yeah, so what? Private capital markets have become an increasingly popular way for companies to raise money in the U.S. in recent decades, allowing firms to acquire funding from institutions and wealthy individuals without the regulatory burdens of going public. Yeah, I got news for you. That's the law. That's why you don't go public. That's their choice. I'm still failing to see the problem. Maybe you could
help
enlighten me.
So here's my guess as to what the problem is. The problem is the private equity industry has been rerouting capital out of the publicly traded markets. It's basically going to the pension funds, taking our retirement savings, you know, and money from a variety of places and skimming off the high yields with a lot of disaster capitalism in the private market. And so it's making the public markets weaker and weaker and weaker. And it's just, you know, it's part of the corruption cycle. And you have these huge right. unicorn companies that are, you know, if you look at what's going on and what they're getting away with, it's pretty shocking. Now, the question is, what do you do about it? I don't see, you know, the SEC, and I don't know the details of what they're proposing, because there are, you know, private companies are subject to SEC if they're doing private placements and securities deals. So even if they're private, if they're doing securities deals, they are subject to SEC disclosure and regulation. So I'm not sure what the details are. The problem is you have an SEC that just said in its comments on FASB 56, no comment. So
yeah.
When the federal government took the vast majority of the U.S. securities market completely dark and said, no transparency, we can do whatever we want, the SEC said, not a problem. Now, Gensler wasn't there when that happened. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he was being Hillary Clinton's finance chairman. So, yeah. But he wasn't there. But at the same time, there's a serious multiple personality disorder in terms of transparency in the U.S. markets. And
for sure.
And so I think the SECs are not going to be on strong ground on this issue.
Well, let's look at their excuse for getting into this. Why are you suddenly interested in private companies? When they're big firms, they can have a huge impact on thousands of people's lives with absolutely no visibility for investors, employees, and their unions, regulators, or the public. I'm not interested
isn't that,
in forcing...
Isn't that the antitrust division's job?
I think SEC is a bit different. Their jurisdiction's different. But look at this. So they're concerned about unions, regulators, and the public. But here's the tell about what's going on, this last quote. I'm not interested in forcing medium and small-sized companies into the reporting regime. Yeah, okay. Thanks for the tip.
Thanks for the warning.
Thanks for the tell there.
Right.
Guy, appreciate it, you know. Unbelievable. You know, I know a lot of people who work in big manufacturing concerns here in Northeast Indiana. And I'm asking them, I said, but that's an enormous plant you work out. Is that a publicly traded company? And more I'm finding out the reason these companies have gotten successful is they've stayed out of the stock market.
Right.
They don't let the Black Rocks come in and spoil the party.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. So, if you're going to make climate change go, you need to get in on the SEC mechanism.
Yeah.
And that may be... Yeah. That may be another reason to take it down. So,
yeah.
But what I was saying about what the SEC is saying about enforcement, those are all issues that need to be enforced, but it's not the SEC's job to enforce them. In other words, you know, that's the portfolio of all different divisions at the Department of Justice who are not doing their job.
Right. I thought your jurisdiction was publicly traded companies.
Right.
Stay in your lane. What are you doing?
Right. Right.
Right. Completely. Anyway, next story, this is sort of a quick hit. Biden's infrastructure bill contains backdoor kill switch for cars Buried deep within the massive infrastructure legislation recently signed by the president is a little noticed safety measure that will take effect in 5 years. Marketed to Congress as a benign tool to help prevent drunk driving, the measure will mandate that automobile manufacturers build into every car what amounts to a vehicle kill switch. You know, what do we know? What we do know is that the safety device must passively monitor the performance of a driver of a motor vehicle to accurately identify whether that driver may be impaired. So I don't know really what's going on with that story, but.
So there is no doubt that they're planning on using the smart grid to control travel and spatial control.
Yeah, and, right.
Right. So
that's a camel's nose under the tent.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You couldn't get me an electric car if you paid me, but.
Use your drunk driver bugaboo to go ahead and start installing all these things that control the car.
Well, it's not. So we're looking at automated planes, automated cars, automated trucks. And there is no doubt that the transition to using them is very scary. So we talked a couple of weeks ago about the, you know, the planes literally, the pilots cannot take back control in an emergency.
Right.
And that may be part of this issue with the 5G, is that the 5G messes with the software and the communication systems. And then suddenly the pilot's sitting there and there's, you know, there's nothing he can do because it's an automated system and he can't take back control. So
that's horrifying to me. I imagine how horrifying that is to a pilot.
The pilot who explained to my friend how this worked had immediately retired, said, I'm not flying under those conditions.
Yeah.
I'm not. Right.
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 So I think we're going to be seeing many, many issues on the automation of trucks, the automation of cars, automations of plane. All of them facilitating greater central control. And that's why we
can't
let the passports happen. And that's why all these different mechanisms to control spatially, we can't let go into effect.
Right.
Got to stop it now.
Speaking of control, central control, and speaking of Bukov's experts, here's our next story, another horrifying story. Cambridge peer-reviewed study suggest authoritarianism might be necessary to fight climate change.
Oh, really? You think? Well,
thank goodness it was peer reviewed. I feel so much better that you've got experts on board. Let's just take a look at this. The study, it's not just any study. It's published in Cambridge University's American Political Science Review and first reported by the Foundation for Economic Education, leads with a question of, quote, is authoritarian power even legitimate, before the author outlines, of course, how it could be when combating climate change. Of course it's legitimate. There's an emergency. Emergency. So under normal conditions, you know the script. Under normal conditions, we have democracy. We have a constitution. We have all these protections. But when it comes to climate and emergencies, just like the pandemic, just like, here you go, right, according to the script, COVID-19 pandemic, we're going to have to have limitations on free movement and association. And climate change is an even greater threat to public safety than COVID. Consequently, I argue, legitimacy may require similarly authoritarian approach. Well, thank goodness that a series of political scientists agree on this one. I feel so much better.
The government grants will continue to flow to Cambridge University.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
The last story.
Did I ever tell you about my fight with Alan Greenspan over the popsicle index?
No.
Do you remember the popsicle index? The popsicle index is an index I created when I was at Hamilton Securities working with HUD. And the popsicle index is the percent of people in a neighborhood who believe that a child can leave their home, go to the nearest place to buy a popsicle, and come home alone safely. So it's sort of a free to roam index. And believe it or not, the popsicle index, there's incredible correlation between the popsicle index and the equity value of the real estate. You know, if a place is wonderful for kids and safe for kids, you know, the real estate goes up in value, the schools are better, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so there was a period in the early 2000s when it started to really take off, the idea of the popsicle index and using it as an indicator. Now, The reason I created the way I created is the popsicle, your popsicle index is whatever you feel it is. No academic can come in and say, well, we've done statistical analysis and you're wrong. The popsicle index is really ABC. Anyway,
it's subjective and it's small d democratic.
Right. And so yeah. The popsicle index in a neighborhood is whatever that neighborhood votes on what it is. That's what it is. And that's what's important right. because that's an honest feedback loop. If you don't feel safe, you're not safe, no matter what the central bankers say. Anyway, so it starts to really take off very powerfully. It was like 2002 or 2003. It was right after 9/11. Alan Greenspan got up and made a huge speech publicly about we can only have statistically verifiable indicators for our neighborhoods. And it was clear he was adamant that they needed to have academics who they funded controlling all the feedback loops.
Yeah,
it was
right.
I never thought that they were as fragile as they were, but it was a remarkable moment because I thought Alan Greenspan's afraid of the popsicle index. Wow.
Yeah, they're very fragile. They will not
right.
engage in debate. They won't even acknowledge people who aren't in their circle because right. they're afraid. They know they get waxed.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right, last story in FedWatch. This is a really good graphic from Visual Capitalist. Companies gone public in 2021 visualizing IPO valuations. And they do it month by month going down vertically. So you can see January, the biggest one here was, there you go. Let me see if I can get this. Nope, okay. Affirm, Qualtrics, and then you have Coupon in March, Coupang, and then the biggest one of the year was in April, Coinbase.
Right.
And then Didi, also big. Coinbase, an $86 billion IPO in April, and then Didi, $73 billion in June, and so on. But what a magnificent graphic of IPOs last year. Huh?
So we're just about to come out in an article probably in early February on SPACs. Because if you look back over the last 2 years, it's amazing how much of the IPOs have been blind pools. That's tapered off a little bit, but it's extraordinary. And when you watch the IPO market, we're now seeing the crypto because the exchanges move into the IPO market. So the linkages yeah. between crypto and the equity markets are beginning to grow.
Very interesting. Yeah. And like you say, you know, Powell came out in his testimony and said, I think that, you know, these things like, you know, cryptos can coexist with central bank digital currencies for sure.
Right. Especially if they control the in and out.
But I think any even casual Fed watcher realizes that right. the Federal Reserve keeps its eye on the stock market 24/7. No right. doubt about that.
But here's the thing. I mean, in addition to Powell not wanting to start a fight with the crypto guys, they want to get as much cash into crypto as possible because that's a steam valve on inflation. The yeah. more money they can get going into crypto, you know, the crypto has served the central bankers very, very well. And I think if you look at the Australian reforms, that's what they're going to slap on them so they make sure they get control as the market grows. But
yeah.
Why let that money come back into real assets?
Right.
Right.
Right. Keep it where you can choke it off. Right. With those right. places like Coinbase, the exchanges, the crypto exchanges.
Right.
That's a big choke point. You have,
well,
you know, you get your fist around the neck.
The marketing of crypto for the last week has been unbelievable. We've got a couple stories, but, you know, you saw Joe Rogan come out pumping Bitcoin and I thought, ugh. It's,
yeah,
the
we
whole
don't
thing
even
was
have
a giant
one.
Mistake.
Right.
And the solution is by Bitcoin.
Right. Right.
Yeah, the mistake crowd are pushing Bitcoin.
That's a very nice, tight summary of what's going on there.
Right.
So let's move to CBDC and crypto and the control grid. This is kind of amazing. From International Appeals, top 5G on Earth and in space, 441,000 low Earth orbit satellites operating, approved, and proposed. Now, it's not quite that straightforward. The number is not quite that big. Let's zoom in. During the past 2 years, the number of satellites circling the Earth has increased from 2,000 to 4,800, and a flood of new projects has brought the number of operating approved and proposed satellites to at least 441,000. I have a tough time getting my head around the two order of magnitude difference there, but maybe you can.
So I have no idea. I don't know what the number is of expected operational satellites is, but we are living through an explosion of satellites in the low Earth orbit, and that is a signal of a major piece of the control grid.
Gotta be.
Right. And part of the challenge of pulling out of, you know, if you look at 190 plus countries moving in lockstep on COVID-19, you know, one of the reasons is some of that enforcement is coming through the satellites.
Has to be.
Right. You may be sovereign within this landmass, but if you've got satellites going overhead, whether it's surveillance or invisible weaponry, that has a dramatic impact on who's really in control.
But I mean, there's 4,800 satellites now. We just saw that.
Right.
Right. There's 24 time zones. Right.
Right.
You got 20, what is that? 20 satellites per time zone.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. And then even if you discount an order of magnitude, so instead of two orders of magnitude increase, it's going to be one order of magnitude. You're going from 20 to 200 satellites overhead per time zone. That's a,
right.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's busy. It's going to
get
real busy.
It's very
up there.
Busy. You know, for years I've been saying when we did the space, here we go in 2015, and then space-based economy in 2017, which are the old wrap-ups. We've done a lot on space for a long time. But one of the things I said was one of the greatest fortunes of the 21st century would be cleaning up space debris. Because all you need is one satellite to get busted up and then spread out and bust up and make a mess of other satellites. And 2 years ago in Zurich, a company started that was doing, you know, that announced its business was space debris. I told one of our subscribers in Zurich, go over, knock on the door and propose that you invest. Because this is a business with a huge future.
Yeah, so, and by the way, I was off by an order of magnitude myself. Now it's 4,800, so it's 200 per time zone now. If it goes up, it's 2,000 per time zone.
Wow,
that's a lot, man. That's a lot of satellites up in the air.
Right, and I hate to say this, it's a lot of AI and software tracking you.
Yeah.
You know, the problem with the AI and software is if you have 100 companies all with their, you know, all with an AI and software bot on you, and they're all trying to do what's good for the company instead of good for you, it's a very incoherent experience.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to Bitcoin and promotion of Bitcoin. Here you go, from the horse's mouth.
Oh,
Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs.
$100,000 Bitcoin. $100,000 Bitcoin possible over 5 years in digital gold scenario. Goldman Sachs believes Bitcoin will steal market share from gold in the store of value market, driving its price just above $100,000. But regardless of whether investors treat Bitcoin as a store of value, the allure of sky-high returns and adoption of FI should drive sustained price growth. Okay? So there you have it. Goldman's in on it. And no matter what, where you turn, it's going to be a great, great investment.
Well, it's a no-brainer for the central bankers to try and get as much cash as possible into digital assets. Why not?
Yeah.
It's, you know, every dime that goes into real assets is competing against you for control of, you know, is competing directly with your desire to own and control the real assets. And if you can push them into digital assets, you know, it just helps you with your inflation problem. So
right.
To me, it's a no-brainer.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Now, you know, of course, Goldman has its opinion, but J.P. Morgan has its opinion. This is from Blockworks. J.P. Morgan says 2022 could be the year of the blockchain bridge. Oh, do tell. if Bitcoin is digital value, don't forget Ethereum is a digital canvas or software platform that allows developers to create new crypto and traditional applications, the JP Morgan analyst wrote, Ethereum's use cases are far more significant than what we see for Bitcoin. And then they go on, alternatives to Ethereum. Solana is much faster than Ethereum. Cardano is much more scalable. Polkadot is more interoperable, the market analyst noted. These advantages could allow these other chains to chip away at Ethereum's dominance and the market value as they facilitate the development of new projects. And here you got this graph of Ethereum in blue versus the challengers in gray. It looks like Ethereum has got a firm hold on the market, despite what they're saying here. But J.P. Morgan's take on it. Don't go Bitcoin, go Ethereum.
So, well, but here's what you've got. You've got a new significant chorus encouraging people to get involved in crypto.
Yes.
And it's a very significant chorus. And what it says to me, you know, because one of my questions has been, how will they handle crypto vis-a-vis the rollout of the CBDC? And what it says to me is the pump will not be over in 2022. And they're going to want to keep sucking as much money into crypto as possible. Even if they throw the Australian reforms on crypto, they're going to let it run for some period of time. And if you look at how long it's going to take them to do a CBDC, you know, if they succeed, it's 2025. So whatever the story is, the pump's not over in 2022. It's what it sounds to me.
Right. I want to highlight one chorus member who I found fascinating that he's part of this conversation. That's Bill Miller. Coinbase, which had 73 million. So you see up here, Coinbase is a buy. It had 73 million verified users as of the end of the third quarter, became a public company in April. Bill Miller made similar comments about Coinbase in October when he said during an interview with an author, William Green, that it could be the default position for growth investors that want exposure to the crypto market without investing directly in crypto assets. He added at the time that Coinbase could reach $1 trillion market cap. Now, I don't have to tell you about Bill Miller, but I'll tell you subscribers, the legend of Bill Miller is famous in financial circles because for years and years, I think it was 16 or 17 years in a row, Bill Miller, who was at Legg Mason, beat the S&P 500 16, 17 years in a row. It was statistically impossible.
Right.
Only 20% of managers beat the S&P 500 in a given
year. Actually, It's 24%.
Okay. So take 0.24 and just raise it to the 10th power. 0.24 to the 10th power is zero. And he did it to the 17th power 17 years in a row. And then in 2008, Bill Miller got annihilated. So he had Secretariat way out in front of everybody. Once it was said and done and he lost everything in 2008, not only was he not leading the pack, he was not only in the middle of the pack, he was at the back of the pack.
Right.
He got crushed that bad in 2008. So to me, it's interesting that Bill Miller is now being, you know, resuscitated and thrust into the crypto promotional. No? Find that very interesting.
That's going to become a big gang.
Yeah, it is. I fell out of my chair when I saw
you got Bill Rand Paul, you got Goldman Sachs, you got J.P. Morgan Chase, you got Bill Miller, you got Joe Rogan. You know, everybody's there.
They got the all-star team, don't they?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to our favorite, the happiest topic of the week, every week, which is pushback. We have a good one this week. Remember the FOIA and the FDA saying, "Oh, we'll give you the stuff in 75 years." Well, there was a lawsuit, you know, that challenged the FDA on FOIA, and boy, did the FDA lose big time.
They really
instead
lost.
They got pounded. Instead of the FDA's requested 500 pages per month, court orders FDA to produce Pfizer COVID-19 data at a rate of 55,000 pages per month. So let's get the whip out, fellas, and get that stuff produced. On behalf of a client, so this is the lawyer, Aaron Seary, who represented the plaintiffs in the FOIA suit against the FDA, my firm requested that the FDA produce all data submitted by Pfizer to license its COVID-19 vaccine. The FDA asked the court for permission to only be required to produce at a rate of 500 pages per month, which would have taken over 75 years to produce. I am pleased to report that a federal judge soundly rejected the FDA's request and ordered the FDA to produce all the data at a clip of 55,000 pages a month. And then he goes on and says, nobody should ever be coerced to engage in an unwanted medical procedure. And that's bad enough, but the government wanted to also hide the data by waiting to fully produce what it relied on to license this product until almost every American alive today is dead. That right. form of governance is destructive to liberty and antithetical to the openness required in a democratic society. So good for him. That's a big win.
I sent you a link to a video on your Telegram chat. You probably haven't seen it yet. It's a guy who is from Canada. He's a big sort of bodybuilder, handsome guy. And he announces he's living in Mexico now. And he said, why is it that everybody in third world countries is enjoying freedom and liberty and everybody in North America and Europe is under, you know, complete control? He said,
great question.
This was never about health. It was always about control. And I would frankly rather live a simple, poor life free than be in a fancy high-tech prison. And he said, what you have to understand is the third world countries are run by drug cartels. And the difference between a government and a drug cartel is that they're both organized crime, but the drug cartel does not mandate that you take their drugs.
Wow.
It's very powerful. Check it out. It's maybe we'll run it next week. It's hysterical.
I know the guy you're talking about.
Who's really?
Shown up. Yeah, I think so.
For all I know, he's an actor. No. He's almost bald, I think.
Okay.
Check it out. You're going to enjoy it.
I will have to check that out. But continuing on with pushback, this from France. French rebels massively destroy 5G networks.
I just love the French. I just love the French.
Yeah. So there's a report on what happened. Relay antenna are being torched. Fiber optic cables cut. Pylons unbolted. During the night, people burn construction machinery, attack masts with disc cutters, or destroy electrical equipment with sledgehammers. So vehicles are also being set on fire in at least 140 attacks since the start of the COVID repression, with the cost to the industry running into tens of millions of euros. Pascaline, a resistance fighter interviewed by a reporter, says she has been forced into action by a sense of urgency. We are living in a crossroads period. If we do nothing now, this industry will have permanently taken hold. Pascaline says, I love this, says her fellow saboteurs have a wide range of backgrounds, with yellow vests and anarchists fighting alongside Christians who are equally opposed to the fascistic new normal grid being built with 5G. That is just outstanding.
Isn't that great?
I love that. I love that. Yep.
Okay.
I want to turn to an entirely different kind of attack on a 5G network. This one's from Australia, so let's take a look at this. This is a video. This is shot by a guy who narrates this video. These are pigeons at a tower. Watch this.
I love this one.
Yeah, 5G not getting much love this week.
Yeah,
and pushback, huh?
Yeah, isn't birds are smart. The birds are smart. They know.
They know.
Yeah.
And the final pushback story from the world of sports. I take this with a couple tablespoons of salt, but report it nonetheless. Boomer Esiason is an old quarterback for the Bengals. Really good back in the day. Has a source who says Aaron Rodgers, current quarterback for the Packers, will threaten Super Bowl boycott. Boomer Esiason shared this morning on his WFAN radio show a text from a source who claims that Rodgers will threaten to boycott the Super Bowl. The Packers would first have to make it, of course, if the NFL doesn't eliminate some of the COVID protocols. Rodgers particularly doesn't like the rule that compels testing of asymptomatic players. Man alive, if that were true, would that be awesome?
That would be
awesome. I'm not holding my
awesome.
Breath, though. Not holding my breath.
That would be awesome.
But Aaron Rodgers, the quarterback, who was getting pestered by a journalist who was saying he ought to be eliminated from even being considered for MVP called the reporter a bum and said, this guy just wants to add a letter to the MVP to call the MVVP the most valuable vaccinated player. And it's all BS. Aaron Rodgers is a good guy, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what else we got. I think it's time to move to charts. Are you ready?
Yeah, although I want to mention Cash and Coin before we move to charts.
Yeah.
So we've had a wonderful response. I just want to thank all the subscribers. We're trying to move, particularly people recurring in January or February, their subscriptions. PayPal unexpectedly unimpounded our funds, which were not supposed to be available till January 27th. And I think one reason they might have is if you look at our sales figures, they've dropped relative to last year. And it looks to me like the vast majority of the drop is the Cash and Coin. So, so whether it's people canceling their PayPal account or, you know, just moving to Cash and Coin and therefore the sales dropping, somebody's noticing and our funds have been unimpounded. At the same time, we are working as quickly and as urgently as possible to switch. And we just want to encourage every subscriber, please do not use these online payment systems. If they are, PayPal has cut off a lot of our allies, and some of them in ways that were very inconvenient. They've impounded funds. So, you know, find a way to make payments that don't require your supporting or going through people who are trying to censor the content that you want to get. If you're going to be intelligent, you need to get the content that you want. Don't support them. So anything you could do, we have a special offer. You get 3 months extra on your subscription if you come into Cash and Coin. If you haven't come into Cash and Coin yet, please get off of the online systems if you can and come into Cash and Coin. We really appreciate it. The your money good. So if you move to Cash and Coin, we will assume your money good and keep your subscription going or start a new subscription, you know, and we give you plenty of time to get your check or the other sort of transfer payments in. So I just want to put in a plug for Cash and Coin, and I want to thank everybody who's done it. And if you haven't done Cash Friday yet, as John would say, maybe you want to do Cash not only on Friday, but every day.
Every day, Cash all the time, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's look at charts.
Yeah, okay, so let's start off with the dollar index here.
Yeah, so the dollar has had a strong year. Right now it's strong. You know, it has managed, it flew up in 2014 and has been holding that $90 line. A couple times we've gotten close to breaking it just on a day, but it's pretty much held that 90 line and now it's moving up. And I just wanted to point to everybody, no matter what is happening to the brand and the debasement of the brand, the U.S. dollar continues to be strong, in part because there's really no contender right now to take away reserve currency status. And so dollar continues strong, and a lot of that is making other people weak.
Yeah, boy, that's interesting. It peaks out here in about 2002. Huh?
Right. And you notice, take a look at the drop that was happening the summer of 2001 before 9/11.
Yeah, that's pretty,
yeah,
pretty big.
Part of the central control was to manage the decline.
Huh.
So, yeah. So you proceeded to get a big decline and they were able to manage it because they had a lot more control.
Yeah, it looks pretty solid though, I got to say.
Right.
Pretty stable. Okay. Next up. This is not straightforward FinViz. It looks like it though.
So this is the country chart. I can't see it on the telephone.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So
I just wanted to take, I like occasionally to look at the, now with the ETFs, it makes it easier to track different countries and how they're doing.
Right.
And what you see on this chart, the country at the top is Greece because it was just down so low. So it's, you know, that's a, you know, something that got hammered that popped up. But what you see are the countries that are doing well in this environment. So, you know,
Greece, Norway, Denmark, Ireland, Mexico, top five.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But U.S. continuing strong. So,
Yeah, USA sitting there at
because remember, the USA market is by far the biggest.
USA and
And
Canada and Japan neck and neck, no surprise there.
right.
And then at the bottom, China minus 40% and Malaysia minus 66%.
Right.
Malaysia
So,
always gets beaten
right.
by the powers that be, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, because it's not on board for the narrative. But the other
Right.
thing you see is you really
Right.
see Asia drop back. Now, China's growth rate has been phenomenal, but you're starting to really see China have problems both in terms of accessing food, and there's a
Yeah.
real food war going on here. But the other thing is you've seen their property markets finally begin to crack because they've kept a lot of the economy pumped with government debt and real estate debt and an extraordinary amount of construction for which there was no supply. So
Yeah.
China really dropped back a lot this year.
The big surprise to me in this whole chart is Israel. The bottom half at minus 10%, basically. That surprised me.
So I haven't looked into why Israel's trading off, because I generally, I don't have any money in Israel and don't trade in Israel. It's a small
Yeah.
market. But if you look at how gruesome the politics have been in Israel over the last 3 years, and how gruesome what they're doing to their population is, this doesn't surprise me. How in the world can a country with this many publicly traded companies function given, the attack and war on their population, including their labor?
Yeah.
So I don't know the details of what is going on. Israel is a source of a lot of cybersecurity and tech capacity. So their tech industry is very much part of helping to centralize control.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that it would be down.
Sure, it sure is. Okay, keep it moving. Now this is the standard FinViz, and again, we see the basement dweller VIX, and not much above them. You
The
know,
money
precious
world is
metals,
counting on the
palladium.
Fed to support their put despite what Jay Powell is saying.
And then at the top, usual suspects at the top too: coffee, lumber, oats, canola, heating oil, energy type stuff, gas, oil at the top.
Right. So
You know.
what the American household is doing is are experiencing huge increases in the price of their staples while
Yeah.
the hedge funds are enjoying the Fed put.
Yep. Boy, aren't they ever.
And you wonder
Okay.
where inequality comes from.
Yeah, right.
Right.
No mystery there. Okay. Next
Okay,
up.
so in the stock market, I wanted to take a fairly long-term look at stocks that were involved in the centralization of control versus stocks that were involved in helping people get away from the centralization of control is the only way I can describe it. And I'm having trouble seeing it on the, but what you should have there
Yeah.
is you should have the S&P.
At 107%, Robo at 131%,
Now, Robo is an
and
ETF, or it's an index for robotics and automation. So high
yep.
tech, so essentially think of it as robotics. So you've got
Yeah.
robotics.
And then finally at the bottom, at 46% is Taiwan Semiconductor TSC.
Right. So semiconductors have been doing well. Taiwan is sort of the largest one, largest producer, and it's underperforming the S&P. The robotics is outperforming the S&P. The one I find
Interesting
most
about semiconductors, this part right here is the big, all its jump to 46% came from below zero and happened instantaneously in about middle of October last year.
Right.
That's where the entirety of the gain came from.
Right. That's very interesting. Okay, so let's look at the next one.
Here we go. This is GRNNC. 695.9%. What's going on there?
So Generac is a stock that I got onto during the financial crisis because I was sure that particularly in America, people were going to need interim sources of power when the grid was not reliable.
Yeah.
So Generac makes generators, and I think it was 2006 when I 2007 when I got my generator, and I figured, okay, everybody's in a similar situation. They need to supply the, they need backup power for 1 hour to 3 days, and so generators are going to go. The other one we have here is Winnebago. Is Winnebago
Up
there?
140 on up 140%. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
By the way, these numbers are going back to January of 2017.
Right, I wanted a 5 year look back.
Yeah,
So
you got it.
basically I said, okay, how are, RV sales are going gangbusters. A lot of the best RV companies to sort of measure are not publicly traded, but Winnebago is, so I use them. But RV sales are going gangbusters because people know
Yeah.
they have to, they want to be able to get up and move. So RV sales and generators to me sort of reflect people's faith in the system, and that is they're losing faith in the system. They want to be able
They're
to get
losing
up and go.
faith.
They want to have backup power. So
Yeah.
what do we see? Winnebago by a slight amount, I think, and Generac by a huge amount, out trading the S&P.
Yeah. All
So
right.
whether the guy's trying to centralize or the guy's trying to decentralize,
Yeah,
both are outperforming.
I just changed charts on you. It's the same chart as we saw before, but now there's Taiwan Semiconductor, and you can see it's there in green at the bottom.
Right.
But otherwise, the same 5-year chart we just saw.
Right.
No.
Okay, very interesting.
I think that's it. Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
here's the thing. You continue to see huge performance in both cryptos and the stock markets. So,
Yeah. And
all I
generators.
right. The establishment
It's
is having fun and making money, and people trying to get away from the establishment.
Yeah, the generator is the melted popsicle index. Yeah.
Right.
It's danger, Will Robinson. There's trouble ahead.
Right.
Need power.
There's not just trouble ahead, there's trouble right now. We're in, this is what trouble
Yeah.
feels like. Okay, John, any last thoughts on our theme was intent, murder versus mistake, and you
Yeah,
referred to
and the
experts. See, experts are people who can take murder and turn it into a mistake.
Yeah,
Right?
that's exactly right.
Right.
Yeah, what my mentor told me, there's no such thing as experts. I just know.
You ought
Either
to
you can
write a
defend
book
your
about your
position.
education as a litigator. It would be
Yeah.
very.
No such thing. No such thing as experts. That's just the nonsense. Just the fictional, it's fictional construct. Anyway,
Really?
yeah, it's true too. There really aren't experts. You can take the most advanced person in the world, and if they can't answer questions, what good are they? If they get tangled up and they fall down and get tripped up on their own nonsense, it just shows you there's really no expertise. You could either, it boils down to people got to be smart and educated. That's what it comes down to. And a lot of the experts you see, they're not either one. They're just snake oil salesmen.
Fidelity did a study that I read about in the Wall Street Journal as to how to raise your children so that they couldn't be tricked by, so they would be financially literate and not
Yeah.
trickable. And what they discovered is don't teach them about money, just teach them math. Make sure they're great at math. If
Yeah.
they're great at math, they'll be fine. Right.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, interesting.
that's making, if you understand this is twice as big as this, you're harder to trick.
For sure.
For
Yep.
sure. Okay. Well, I will point out, somebody said last week that we were very depressing. But I will
Oh.
point out that you can't heal an infection unless it rises to the surface.
Right.
And what I'm seeing is a rise to the surface and an ability to tell who's who. And I think
Yes.
that's unbelievable. That's the step we have to take if we're going to make progress here. So I find it very optimistic what's happening.
Yeah, sunlight's the best disinfectant.
Which Supreme Court justice said that?
They didn't. That's from someone else.
Yeah, but Brandis is always, one of them is always used to quote it.
Yeah, I think it's Brandis. Then.
Okay. So I'm a lawyer. I think you're a lawyer. I think you know everything about the law.
No.
John, have a great week. Thank you for joining us on Money and Markets.
Thanks for having me, and I will see you next week.
Yep. We're on.